Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're going to get into a conversation firmly in the world of telecommunications, just to understand some of what's going on in that particular industry, some of the big trending topics, getting some insights, from one of the big industry bodies around that. Helping me to understand, the lay of the land and what's going on, we are joined by Yanom Vuyisobati, who is the CEO of the Association of Communication and Technology, that is ACT, and she's going to be giving us some insight into a number of different aspects that they are looking at from an ICT point of view. Yanom Vuyiso, greetings to you today.
Thank you for having me in studio. I really appreciate Mudiwa, and to you and your listeners all over the world, including South Africa. Thank you for having ACT.
Maybe that's a good place for us to start, Yanom Vuyiso, is just around ACT. I believe, if my memory serves correctly, you guys, it's a body that was started a couple of years ago. I believe, an association of a number of different ICT players, including the country's, the country's large telecommunications players as well. Maybe you could give us some insight into, the association itself and the type of work that you're typically concerning yourselves with.
Thank you for that. Yes, we've just been recently registered in 2021, and we had our launch in 2022 as the Association of Comms and Technology. What we do, actually, our work primarily focuses on the ICT ecosystem, matters that are important for the ICT sector. So in the main, we aim to provide a unified voice for this sector within the South African economy. So the things that we do, we collaborate with stakeholders across the ICT ecosystem, wherein we thrive. We're advocating for a thriving communications and telecommunications sector. We do this mostly by conducting research and checking out and conducting leading practices as to what is happening, and doing a lot of analysis, which will actually inform what we do in our policy and regulatory environment within the country. So we have six members, as already alluded. We have Celsius, we have Liquid Intelligent, we have MTN, we have Rain, we have Telkom, and Vodacom. And you would recall that these are people that have massively invested in infrastructure in South Africa. So for a person to become a member of ACT, they need to at a minimum to have invested 6 billion rands in infrastructure within the South African ICT ecosystem. So that means, and so far as making sure that there is network connectivity available, so you're not a person that only offers a service, you also have built a network. So the kind of work that we do, just to give you an example, give you an idea, when you say advocating for a unified voice in the ICT sector, just to give you an idea, it's for instance, the 2G, 3G migration that has been in the spotlight for the last couple of years, where in South Africa is supposed to move away from 2G, 3G handsets and move into 4G, 5G handsets. So we've done a lot of research in this area that will include players such as your tax authorities, National Treasury, which will include your original equipment manufacturers. What is it that can be brought there? Because you can imagine 2G and 3G technology impacts the lower end of the end users. But equally, we in that space, We will engage with the likes of state-owned companies such as Transnet that have heavily invested in the space of 2G technology, the same with tracking companies. So it's across anyone that touches the space, so that is 2G, 3G. So last year then, we published a paper. We do a lot of papers on electricity, and the paper that has garnered a lot of, eyes has been the work on fair share debate. So I believe that we can talk about that, wherein we are saying that in the context of the over-the-top industry, so I would say those over-the-top providers that we've actually identified in our paper should contribute their fair portion to the cost associated with network infrastructure and maintenance. And we're just saying this is designed to address the perceived imbalance between the resources used by over-the-top providers and the network operators who facilitate the delivery of these services. So, yes.
Nomviso, one of the interesting things is that as you're talking about fair share, I'm reminded that last year in my work with Financial Mail, we did a big investigative piece around this fair share debate, around OTT players having to pay their quote-unquote fair share for the use of the infrastructure that their services are thriving on. And lots of things, come out of at least what we were able to find. And I'm sure that you have much richer data and information at your disposal. Lots of people saying, well, if your telecoms operators are providing the highways, then your over-the-top players such as your streaming providers, Netflix, Spotify, and others, as well as your maybe even your social media players and your internet companies, the Googles, the Metas of this world, should be paying a toll of some sort. And that's the analogy we drew, the highway and the toll, to that. But at the same time, some people then coming back and saying, but well, a lot of these guys have been investing in their own infrastructure, which a lot of the SA telecoms players are also plugging into. If we point to the 2Africa undersea cable, and then I think, what is the Google equivalent? There's 2Africa and then there's the other one, because one is done by Meta, one is done by Google. The name will come to me just now. Equiano, yes, it's Equiano. Equiano's Google and then 2Africa should be Meta. And people then saying, well, these guys are doing their bit. They are investing in, infrastructure that is plugging into all of this. And that's the sense that we were getting, but your mobile operators are still quite adamant to say it's not enough. So at the beginning of 2025, where are we when it comes to this particular debate?
So I take that. So what we've done, because we have yet to see any person responding to our paper factually on the basis of what we have done. So what we've done is ACT, we've actually broken down as to what are these over-the-top services. So we said video streaming, music streaming, OTT gaming, messaging, and voice over IP services. And we said video streaming, you'll find the Netflix, your Amazon Prime Video, Disney Plus, YouTube, your TikToks. Music, which is the ones that are very popular in South Africa. Music will be Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube. That is music streaming. And then OTT gaming, you think of the PlayStation Plus. And then messaging, if you're looking within our context, talking about WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, WeChat, and Telegram. And then voice over IP, it's the likes of your Zooms, your MS Teams, Google Meet, and messaging apps. So in a nutshell, we're saying, once we take note that some of them, especially two in the context of Africa, have some semblance of ensuring that there is connectivity, But you must ask yourself, who is connecting there within their systems? Who? Very few within the, I said, the Western Cape area, because that's where the undersea cable is landing. And in the main, if you are looking at the messaging, WhatsApp is the biggest one in the South African context. And all WhatsApp communication, despite being owned by Meta, goes through about 99% of it goes through the mobile telephony networks. Because as you know, in South Africa, we're very limited fixed line, right? The same with Facebook Messenger, which is still owned by Meta. So you go to the issue of music streaming, similar that the likes of Spotify and YouTube especially, which is owned by Alphabet, Google. And that is where the most traffic is coming from. And it's actually being the people utilize the network operators. The same with video streaming, the Netflix, the Amazon Prime, TikTok, which is the biggest. I'll say that, TikTok, which is the most popular. And our point, you were just saying, their success in terms of their business model that they offer is dependent on availability of high quality, reliable, and efficient network infrastructure. And the infrastructure itself, because it has the demand of these services, such as the ones that I've mentioned, because I'm talking about the bigger ones, has created an unprecedented demand for data bandwidth and network capacity within the South African context. We know it is happening in other countries, South Korea, EU, and related areas. And our research tells us that the volume of video consumption is increasing and is forecasted to increase. And therefore, network operators, and that's what I'm saying, I'm not saying mobile, network operators, if you think about it, Equid is not a mobile network operator. Network operators face the task of upgrading and expanding of their networks, because me and you as consumers are demanding a high quality videos, high quality services to be available. And in this regard, we do take note, for instance, that the other argument that you're saying, that we do note that people are paying subscription fees, right? And we're saying the balance has to be looked at as to we're in a situation that we need to understand the investment that has been made by the telco in maintaining the network infrastructure. And that has to be balanced against the content generation costs. The thing about the Netflix of this world, the subscription fees that people pay, and advertising revenue in order to arrive at a fair and equitable outcome. So a party, let's say, such as yourselves, a business that you would belong to a certain platform. It's not necessarily that Business Day in itself is massive, making a massive amounts of money from advertising revenue or subscription fee. The person that is able to make money will be the likes of Zoom, because whether you have one person coming into this recording or 10, your cost is still the same from a Zoom cost. And then we're saying we want South Africa to advance and we need to ensure that we modernize. But in doing so, we need to ensure that there is fair compensation for the increased traffic that has been found within the network environment. So that's what we are saying. And we, so that you understand where I know people think that we're saying, oh, fair share at all costs. We are saying that we want to ensure that resources are used efficiently, and OTT providers, because they rely on this network infrastructure, they need to have fair share arrangements to ensure that the cost of building and maintaining the networks that supports their businesses as well. And then this also coupled with network operators themselves, if you think about it, the network operators, if they have that arrangement, it also incentivizes them to invest in more, better, and efficient networks. So I'll pause there before I want to talk to what is it that we are proposing from a regulatory regime that needs to be followed in order to deliver for the end user at the end.
There are two things that come up on my side, Nomviso, as you're talking, that I'm then curious about. The first one is, as much as we are talking about the use of the network infrastructure for these OTT players to thrive, the other piece of the equation is the fact that from a consumer point of view and also business point of view, those on the consumption side, of this equation are paying a fee to the network operators for the use of their networks to access, these various providers. As much as I will pay a subscription for Netflix, for Spotify, I am also paying my fiber provider for the use of my fiber line, or I'm paying my mobile network provider airtime or data for me to be able to access those services on my mobile device or wherever I am accessing it from. So I guess it begs the question to say, surely operators are getting their money for the use of for access to these platforms. They are getting their money from the consumption side of the equation. What do we say to that? And then secondly, to your point just now, what are the remedies or what are the policy resolutions that the industry is proposing right now?
Yes, I had to always mute myself. So I'll start with the first one. So far as the end user having to pay a fee for consumption of data and related issues. You would, no one is disputing that there is a fee that is paid, but that fee is only insofar as the service that is provided. Over and above, there is what our issue is, who then maintains the network, right? Unlike if you're looking for I'll make the example about YouTube. I have to pick on them because those are the ones that are like even here, it is used a lot at my house. That so if you are looking at YouTube as an end user, the thing that you are likely to do is that you pay your data cost. Let's say you're on the 99 rand package, if it's still there, or 400 rand package, depending on how many megabits you have. That only guarantees you a certain service for a certain limited amount of time. That is why you will see most network operators, wherein your consumption increases, they reduce the speed, right, of your services. And we're saying this shouldn't be there if each party was paying their equal fair share for purposes of maintaining and building new infrastructure. And we're saying, look, we realize that this problem is new in South Africa. And we are saying that the regulators and policymakers need to design a future regulatory regime that needs to deliver for the end user in South Africa, and not only look at network operators and only look at over-the-top services providers. And we're saying the considerations that they need to take, especially if you're thinking of policymaker, minister, regulators, you say, first, before we say regulatory intervention, we're asking them to understand the market, right? You need, because you've never been in this space, you need to understand the market. Because without an enabling regulatory framework in place to empower regulators to conduct the required market studies or socioeconomic impact analysis, it would not be possible to truly understand the OTT market and the impact it has on consumers and the overall competition out there and were saying, we would like policymakers and regulators, by the way, in our paper, we've included ICASA, we've included the competition authorities. We're also touching to the financial services, some of the financial services regulators, because it cuts across, including your information regulator, that they need to have a process wherein they'll create an environment that makes them understand the OTT market, how it is run and how it's facilitated. And we're saying when they're doing that, they should strive for regulatory parity between the what is called traditional telecom service providers, which are network operators, and OTT services. And we're saying this means for them, they need to review existing regulations and adapt them to accommodate the changing dynamics of the sector and the industry as a whole. If you think about it, that we've had the legislation in South Africa since 2003, 2004, which is the Electronic Communications Act. A lot of things have changed since then, but regulators are not keeping up with the speed of technology. And to our competition tribunal, we're saying they need to maintain robust competition policies in order to prevent anti-competitive behavior and promote a competitive market environment. And you may ask, what is this? What does that mean? And we're saying this must also look at things like fair market access for new entrants, right? And addressing any barriers to competition that may arise due to regulatory imbalances. In this instance, we mean something like this. You will see later on, you have a situation wherein network operators are expected to, in order for you to run your podcast, I'll make this because that's the space that you're in, to run your podcast, you don't have the rest to entry of requiring to pay a license fee, right? You don't have a regulatory areas that says to you on an annual basis, do a compliance report to ICASA, you must hire X number of people to ensure they have such. And we're saying, look at the entire framework and say whether it is fair for either new entrants and those that have come elsewhere, be it America, be it China, be it South Korea, those services that people are using, whether it makes it easier for them to come into our markets and more difficult for those that are entrenched that are here. And then there's a term that we came up with that we said you need to strike a balance between commercial fairness and legal reasoning. And we realize this is a difficult task for regulators and policymakers, that assuming that they are going to come up with a regulatory framework for fair share arrangement, but saying they should assess the economic impact for both network operators and OTT providers, right? And ensuring that both comply with competition law and regulation. Because for us, we find that the laws are actually geared on those companies that are based here in South Africa, those companies that are licensed in South Africa. And then the part that was going to shock you, then we're saying perhaps encourage industry collaboration and self-regulation, right? These are the options that we're saying are available to policymakers, wherein they should encourage both industries to self-regulate within the OTT sector. Then policymakers can facilitate initiatives that bring network operators together in order to discuss fair share arrangements and not be scared of each other. And encourage that there should be established guidelines and practices to ensure transparency, fairness, and accountability in implementing the fair share arrangement. SFFs consider deregulation of network operators, because if you think of the telecoms of this world, those people are highly, highly regulated. So perhaps you can start by reducing the regulatory burden on some of them, right? But the last one, which we saw, it actually worked quite differently in December, is the relaxation of laws. And we're saying we need to relax laws to encourage investment within the sector innovation. So it's a lot of work that we are saying, before you do anything untoward, policymaker and regulators, give yourself time to understand this market. And in giving yourself that time to understand the market, encourage collaboration, encourage self-regulation in the meantime, which has happened in, say, in other spaces within South Africa, and encourage further engagement, but make sure that the competition law policies are adhered to, make sure that there is regulatory parity that is being utilized. We've done a similar exercise even on the satellite and the satellite inquiry that Casa said had. Like, all we're asking is regulatory parity. And at the end of it, we are of the view that the South African consumers will benefit.
No, most certainly, we do hope, for that type of thing. And at least it's good to see and hear that there is a lot of robust engagement around some of these issues. And, you know, whilst that's happening, trying to navigate some of that, some of that complexity, for that as people try to reach that regulatory parity that you're talking about. I wanted to then switch over, as we in this second half, in this last part of the discussion, to maybe touch on some of the other big things that have been making headlines, in your particular industry. You touched on satellite just now. But before we come to satellite, I wanted to touch on Rika. Because this is something that we recently covered as Business Day, Rika being that regulation of interception of communications and provision of communication related information act. Most people just know it as Rika. The fact that we have to provide things like identity documents and that type of thing before we can register a SIM card and other manner of, telecommunication services in South Africa. But recently it came up, a lot of those calls for better enforcement of the Rika Act, a lot of people saying that it's not being enforced the way that it was meant to. Our understanding is that the whole reason why Rika came about was to reduce some of this activity so that we could have an element of traceability in the case of, certain crimes and that type of thing. So, your take when it comes to, some of what's happening around the Rika Act and, some of these calls for better enforcement of that act.
Okay. Perhaps because I didn't want to ruin the introduction. Because as ACT, we're also doing a project on Rika. I just need to declare that up front. So our solution has been to actually come up with a solution that we propose to the powers that be within government, wherein issues of Rika are very, I say, complicated by fraudulent activities. So you will find that with your name and ID, there are 5 SIM cards that are registered under your name that you're not aware of, and there's all sorts of things. So we want to have a standardized way of how Rika needs to happen, a guideline, almost like what is similar being done in the financial services. And so far as FICA, know your customer kind of thing. There are areas, so for instance, how do you work better? How do our members work better with Home Affairs and have access to the e-heinous kind of thing? And how So we have challenges, for instance, with people that are coming in with passports only, which was not the original design of the RICA legislation. Over and above, there is not a similar arrangement for passports as there is for IDs. So in a nutshell, we are quite heavily involved with the RICA process, coming up with an industry-wide solution. But I want you to give you with this, so that why I'm saying industry-wide solution, we are careful as not to, break any competition laws. So we wrote to the Competition Commission as well, saying, look, this is the project that we want to do, and this is what we intend doing, and trying to comply with the law and having a standard, compliance situation. So just to give you an example, you would have seen one of the banks, I know you don't bank with this bank, has has come up with a situation that says you can be one person with 10 SIM cards. And that scares us, right? So we're saying, want to have a standard definition as to what how many SIM cards a person can have. Do we need to have biometric? Because it's obvious that the paper copies and addressing have been open to abuse. So that is what we have been busy with. We had reached out to this is how long this program is. We had reached out to the then Minister Ronald Lamola when he was Minister of Justice. And we made proposition that we're setting up the structure and we're going to report back to them. And then we have been reporting back to the EDG that is responsible for this area. We are really, and I'm saying us and the, I think there's a couple of our members that are impacted by RICA, not all, that the solution is near completion, because we have actually even, which is something quite unique in this instance, brought in even a law firm just to make sure we're not found wanting in terms of legislative requirements, but we're really, really concerned. We saw the issue of Minister Mchunu talking about the issue of RICA. That being said, in one of the things that we came up with, we said RICA all by itself does not negate fraudulent activities happening. As a result, we have to ensure that there is a very good relationship between network operators, law enforcement, and related parties, because an investigation still needs to happen as to how the fraud happened, because in itself, technology does not make you immune from fraudulent activities happening, but we are saying that it can be minimized, right? And that's where we're coming in with the solution in this regard. We had set ourselves a target, and they were closer to the target than what was that what we agreed to with our principals. Yeah.
One of the things that I'm quite curious to get your take on is because there's been a lot of noise around this. I was actually asked recently this particular issue around the biometric aspect, because there's been a lot of criticism that's been brought against that particular type of enforcement and those types of plans, and some people coming out and saying things you know, saying things like, oh no, you might lead to a police state, and you know, people might end up being followed, etc. And one of the things that I was asked recently is to say, well, it sounds like the biometric thing could be a good way to get things over. What would it take? And my take was that as a country, you sort of have to decide, because everything comes with, you know, a set of give and takes. If the country is looking to try and clamp down on crime and is serious about it, then probably the biometric route is going to be the way forward. You sacrifice certain things along the way, but at least you get to the overall objective of clamping down and reducing some of the abuse. You mentioned just now abuse around addresses and, you know, paper documents and that type of thing. And us continuing with the same set of continuing doing the same thing and expecting different results might not be the best way forward.
I agreed. You see, I like how you are saying it, because I'll say this, think about it this way. When FICA first came, people complained, right? People threw their toys out of the court because banks were clamping down on the checks and balances, isn't it? No right to privacy. So it's always, you always have to strike a balance. It's almost like that thing of saying, I don't want to give my ID when I'm entering your, let's say, your office complex or your housing complex. It's my rights will be infringed. But my personal information, I don't know what they will use it for in line with FOPIA. But those rights need to be balanced. I have a choice of coming to your building, and I have a choice of not coming. I can meet you outside at a restaurant or wherever. Yeah. I'm not going to be required to have that information. It's the same with RICA. When you choose to utilize a service, and this service needs certain protections and is subjected to laws that need to be tightened from a compliance point of view, you will have to have a choice as to looking for other alternatives, which I might add, maybe those alternatives will not be licensed in South Africa, unfortunately. But within the South African environment, we should always, and I know this sounds like Brand SA, we must always play our part. So I remember just thought of them. We must play our part in reducing crime. Think about it, within the banking sector. I said to people, when I make the example, I always say, there are two banks that I'm aware of that don't have physical branches, right? But those branches, they expect you to do a self-RICA, wherein you take a picture of yourself, right? And here's the kicker. One of those banks was somebody to say, not everyone has a phone with a camera, right? But here's the kicker. One of the banks is dealing, people register at Boxer, is dealing with the lower end of the market, and people still comply with it because they want to bank. Why then it's important for us to have a standardized guidelines? That's to guide people so that you don't say, oh, oopsie, network A doesn't want me to have this. I can just register at a taxi rank without giving out my ID. So there's no point in me going to network B, who demands my copy of my ID, copy of my fingerprint being there. So we just say, let's have a standardized situation wherein everyone, all network operators, are going to be following the same rules, so that you don't run next door to try and circumvent the law, which is what we have noted, that there is no standardized way of dealing with the RICA within the South African environment. And it's not only the network operators, then there is the distribution chain. Unlike with banks, you have distributors. And because you're staying in a suburb, you may not know this. So the distribution chain, if you go, my family also has links in Mthatha. If you think of places such as BEP, you do that. You think you go to a taxi rank here in Pretoria, Bosman, MTN taxi rank. I don't know what it's called. I just know it's MTN in Joburg. There are people that make people, give people SIM cards without recurring. So that value chain as well, which belongs to network operators themselves, has to change because there are certain things that are happening there that are not aligned with legislation.
No, understood. And I guess as you are talking and explaining, it helps us to understand why you characterized it as being quite complicated earlier on. And one hopes that we'll be able to reach that level of standardization, down the line. Because like you said about the banks, it seemed, people wanted to throw out their toys when FICA initially did what it did. But at least there was a unified front and all the banks applied it, the same from my understanding. And, you sort of got that forced adoption to come through because people still want to make use of the services. So they comply with whatever the rules of the game are from that point of view. So maybe there's something to be said, from the network operators and from the regulations actually making it mandatory to have that standardized process so that everyone knows, how to apply, these things. Now, before we let you go, we do have one more, big trending thing that's been happening. And obviously, a lot of it has to do with satellite. You had alluded to it earlier on. I think when it comes to ICT and telecoms, it's probably the issue that has been making the most rounds, especially given all of the different calls and meetings we've been hearing about when it comes to Elon Musk and President Cyril Ramaphosa trying to find a way to bring Starlink into the country and, using Starlink as a way to say, how do we bring more satellite communication into the country to help to plug some of the coverage gaps that exist in South Africa to help to bridge that digital divide. But a lot of noise, obviously, when it comes to Elon Musk and South Africa right now. The fact that they chose not to participate in ICASA's hearings just the other week. All of the stuff around whether or not Elon Musk will come to South Africa. Lots of noise there. But outside of the noise, what do you make of strides that are being made to advance satellite technology, make it more accessible in South Africa from a regulatory and policy point of view?
Actually, ICASA had a hearing, I think, about 2 weeks ago, the week of SONA. That's what I remember, 2 weeks ago. They started an inquiry into satellite. And for us, it's not even about a particular person or persons wanting to come within the South African environment. We have people that are here in South Africa with satellite technology. If you think about it, we have the Eurostat, we have within the network telecoms infrastructure, we have Amazon, just a couple of them that come to mind. And our issue in the main was like, look, the regulatory regime, if there has to be changes to it, it goes back to that issue of regulatory parity. So if you are thinking about regulatory parity, you look at it, I always say it this way. The rules when Mutua came to business, they were this, right? And you have maintained the standard of the rules that Business Day has set up. Now, no voice was to come in. They're like, no, we'll change the rules. But Modua is still playing by the same old rules. You haven't told Modua that the rules are changing specifically for no voice. And we're saying, ensure whatever you do, right, that it's fair game for everyone, right? Don't have special concessions for people because there are people that continue to invest in South Africa, especially in the in the network space. I know that the debate with other people became more a race-based war. We don't get into those debates. For us, we're looking at the regulatory and the policy environment, and we're like, look, people have invested in South Africa, they want certainty. And if a person wants to come in, they must come in through the gate, not the gate of the presidency. The gate is ICASA. And because you'll be setting a precedent that each and every time a person wants to come into South Africa, they go and talk to the president instead of going to talk to ICASA and making the appropriate applications to ICASA. And that application then goes through the normal processes, isn't it? So, and we're saying that's how people, when people want to invest in South Africa, we tell them that's how the game is played. So we are looking for, and the whole war, this is the most annoying thing. When you are mentioning the party that you've mentioned, just go and check. The person only has 4.6 million subscribers worldwide. And you're like, okay, why are we, is it a fail? Is it you really don't understand what is the game being played, whether it's just an agenda trying to push other things that we are not sure of. So as we're saying, go to ICASA. And as ICASA does it, we go to a hearing. It's all fair and that's what. Then we'll tackle each other there and we'll say, these are the things that I'm missing from your application. And it's not unique, by the way. And I think that's the part that people think is the first time we've had a satellite person applying to ICASA. We did have one in the radio space, right? If you, I don't know whether you remember World Radio. It's a satellite radio that is available throughout Africa. ICASA came through the same rules and said, no, these are the things that you need in South Africa. And the person walked away because it's also owned by a one person. That's the first one. Secondly, because we have very short memories. Also, ICASA went there. So I said, somebody needs to go through the ICASA process. You will remember when we used to have ANN7, right? Although it's not linked to the telecom space, we had the similar issue wherein people wanted ICASA to bend the rules for a specific family. And I'm using family in both the examples that I'm using for a specific family. And ICASA said, no, it cannot be like that. There are rules for you to come into the South African market. So it's not about race, because both of this family in World Radio and in the case of the channel that was then 8 and 7, it was about families. And there are rules of ownership in South Africa when it comes to matters related to, say, the telecommunications, ICT sector. Because think about it this way, Mudiwa, that in times of any state of emergency, when we had COVID, one of the people that have leeway is, and you laugh at this, it's postal services, it's ICT services such as your telephony, it's broadcasting services, because that is the only level, that's the only information that people, that's where people can get the information that is reliable from those three sources. And therefore, the issue of ownership is not unique to South Africa. It happens globally that you advance the interest of the South African context. And I understand going through other jurisdictions even want 50%. In other jurisdictions, they even have stricter requirements. You don't only have to be there, you have to have the cultural norms of the country, which is something very weird, but within them, it's understandable. So for us, person must come, but they must enter through the same door that everyone else is coming through.
You know what, Nomvu, so as you're talking, right, I want to make a quick observation. You can choose to respond to it if you like, but it's interesting to me that from a posture point of view, how differently the same act can be looked at and applied depending on what the posture is from a national point of view. So in the case of Starlink, there's a posture of, it almost feels as if South Africa is chasing Starlink. So in that particular respect, you're almost trying to find ways to change the rules and all of that. Whereas the same Electronic Communications Act is the same, it presents a similar stumbling block, you know, not in telecoms, but now in broadcast, to the Canal Plus potential takeover of MultiChoice, because it also has its own ownership requirements when it comes to broadcast entities. Both of these potential things are looked at through the same act, but in one particular case, the country is chasing, so trying to find ways to, you know, bend a rule. And then in another case, a lot has been said. Canal Plus can't, you know, come in, you know, without making some type of a concession around the 20% control of a broadcast license, all of these issues. And we've seen a lot of work being done between Canal Plus and MultiChoice, and they recently announced a structure that addresses that particular issue. So it is just interesting to see how the same act has, you know, sort of been spliced and, you know, approached, you know, in different ways. Albeit, yes, one is broadcast case and one is a telecoms case, but the principle, you know, that is at in question in both cases is similar. So I just find it to be an interesting space that the Electronic Communications Act finds itself. And a lot of it comes down to what you're saying just now, that over time, I wonder what it's going to mean when rules are being possibly bent, you know, to accommodate certain parties, what it's going to mean for the ICT sector, you know, as a whole, what it means for consolidation, deal making, and, you know, anything else that happens in the sector going forward.
Yeah, I think you've actually even answered yourself. So ICASA has always been consistent that at the door, upon entry, you have to meet these requirements. You cannot come and say, well, I cannot. They'll tell you, upon entry, your application has to ensure it addresses this defect. And in actual case, in the ICT space, because the requirement is not as stringent as broadcasting was. Broadcasting is very, it's far more stringent. There is actually even a judgment that talks to this. So I think within the media landscape, it depends who has the loudest voice, because we cannot forget something that happened 7 years ago. And I like the fact you're making correlation between Canal and this issue, that no one has decided to make it a big issue when it comes to Canal, but to say, thou shalt comply. And I know in some instances, so for instance, I had worked in broadcasting, because those that work in broadcasting will say, but we know how the French are when it comes to ownership and control, and therefore they don't let go. Their rules is their rules. So we expect the same in the South African context. And ICASA has been very, very, I say, consistent. You would have seen in recent months the Star Times situation, that in their approach, they might not have the sexiest appeal in terms of PR. Their approach has been very, very consistent. But it's how people decide to carry the story, to run the story. Yeah.
So it has been a really great discussion, just unpacking some of what's going on in South Africa's ICT sector. Nomvuyiso just giving us some insight into, you know, some of the things that they are looking at, you know, right now when it comes to, you know, the satellite industry, when it comes to telecoms industry, you know, when it comes to, you know, what's happening with Rika, starting off the discussion, you know, talking about what's happening in terms of what's called fair share, this idea around your OTT players, whether we're talking streaming services or maybe social media players and other related services, and that they need to, you know, come in and help to participate in the upkeep of network infrastructure. Yes, there is a fee. That is one of the things that the Nomvuyiso gave us to say, yes, the consumer is paying a fee in terms of data use and that type of thing for access. But the question needs to be answered around, you know, upgrading networks, maintaining networks, and the fact that some work needs to be done to make sure that everyone who's participating in benefiting, you know, actually contributes so that we have a fairer landscape and playing field that we are on. Also getting into the Rika Act and some of what's going on in that space. A lot of noise being made in recent weeks about the fact that a lot of fraudulent activity is taking place in South Africa because people have access to unregistered SIM cards, and that enforcement could be in a better place. One of the things that Nomvuyiso was talking about is to say perhaps, you know, as a way to make things better, we could find ways to standardize some of the processes similar to what we've seen in the banking sector around FICA, and, you know, so that that is applied uniformly and that people know what needs to be done and that the rules are enforced in a good way. Ending off talking about the satellite sector, lots of noise, of course, around that particular sector and, you know, ownership rules and all of that. Some of the strides that are being taken to try and accommodate some of the potential investors into the country. But, you know, Nomvuyiso just saying, let's rather, you know, find a way to make sure that the rules are applying, you know, uniformly across the board, because at the end of the day, there are others that have been investing in South Africa, and we should at least be acknowledging the fact that there are those that have been here, and that, you know, it might, you know, not be the best to then start bending the rules in certain ways in terms of the long-term longevity. Also drawing some parallels between what's happening, you know, in the telecom sector as well as, you know, the broadcast sector. I guess what's interesting about those is that they do share some common pieces of legislation. So from a policy point of view, there are a lot of commonalities, and some of the big cases that are happening now do provide some interesting case studies, you know, to see what's going to happen. But Nomvuyiso just letting us know that the regulator, that is ICASA, has tended to be quite consistent in application of the law, and one hopes that that will continue. So that's been it. We were in conversation with Nomvuyiso Bachi. She is the CEO of the Association of Communication and Technology. Nomvuyiso, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, and to your listeners, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. This has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.